after running God knows how many tests, several hundred tests probably by now, it kind of felt like everything was falling into three categories, which then, to be fair, have subcategories. There's various different ways of dealing with things, but everything kind of falls into three areas, which is usability, anxiety, and motivation.
All right. Hi, I'm your host, Khalil Gulivala. Welcome to another episode of the Experiment Nation podcast, a podcast devoted to conversion rate optimizations and experimentation. Essentially, how do you do more with what you have? In today's episode, we have Will Lawrenson, CEO and lead consultant of Customers Who Click. Will, please go ahead, introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks for having me. As you mentioned, I'm Will, based in London, UK. I run Customers Who Click. We're a CRO agency for e-com brands. Been going about 4 years now. Just coming up to 4 years, although I'd say the first two and a half was more of a me being a consultant. And probably the last 18 months, I decided to change that and go full service.
So Will, I think in terms of CRO, we're always interested to know, how does someone get into CRO? Can you talk a little bit about that journey?
Yeah, sure. So I think I kind of just fell into it by accident, I suppose. I worked in a few startups early on in my career. First business I was at was a startup, a very small team of about, I think at most there was about eight of us. And that was in the voucher affiliate space. But we were working with a mobile app that was aimed at bricks and mortar. Okay. So you'd be able to download a voucher onto your phone based on your location and walk into that store, show that voucher and get a discount. And it was a mobile startup within a bigger brand called Marco Media, which owned a voucher brand, My Voucher Codes, which was one of the biggest in the UK. So they had the online side, right? That was well established. So in theory, part of what we should have been doing was just phoning up these brands and saying, you're working with us online, let's do something with your stores as well.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a different model because obviously online is just tracked with cookies and things, whereas in store we were kind of relying on them either tracking the code in their tills and then providing us a report, which I know for a fact works very, very badly.
I was going to ask you that, yeah.
There's one example comes to mind where we did about 20 times the revenue for this brand than all the other competitors combined. And the reason we're pretty confident on this was the staff were given our code and told, we're doing this promotion, this is the code to enter it. And so the vast majority were just default using our code. And the ones that got attributed to the other brands were that when the customer actually showed the code on their phone and the person looked at it and actually noted that down. And then I think the reason we know this is because the next campaign with that brand, we saw the different thing happen. We saw one of our competitors did a massive amount of revenue and the rest of us did very little. So it was kind of like, okay, I think I know what's going on here.
attribution.
Yeah. I started working. It was a weird one there. I actually left the voucher side and started working on a new app for the business, which was combining various other bits of tech we had. The general idea behind this app was you'd be able to leave work. Let's say you've worked a bit late. Mm-hmm. You could leave work. And you could just open up your phone and see which restaurants are nearby that have a table available. Is there any theater on? Are there any cinema viewings coming up? Like what? Almost like what can I do in the next 15 minutes instead of just going home? What's around me right now? We've started working on that, designing that. There was an app we took something from, which was this idea. I know it was a 60-second thing, but for some reason I've got polar bears in my head. I don't know what that's about. But the basic idea was that someone should be able to complete their journey within the app within 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Right? So in this example, open the app, scan through food, theatre, cinema, whatever else. Make a decision, click, book, done.
Okay.
Right, as quickly as we can. Most of it's really easy because it was through APIs. Obviously, if we've saved someone's data, we can just pass it through the API. The vouchers were just click to reveal. So it's all it was all pretty simple.
Yeah.
I left there and moved to another startup where I became head of marketing at the age of like 23, 24, I think. So it was probably a little bit early for me, but it was a very, very small business in the storage space. So this was like Airbnb for storage.
Okay.
Right. So I can rent the spare room in someone's house or an area of their garage or their loft and store my stuff in it.
Yeah.
It's quite a good idea. Some competitors came along and basically optimized the actual storage space model. Mm. So like big, I don't know if you have the brand, but Big Yellow Storage, that sort of thing, where it's a massive warehouse.
Okay.
And you hire out part of it. What they were doing was they were hiring out larger pieces of the warehouse and then storing everyone's stuff in it, right, to optimize the space. Anyway, back to this brand. I very, very quickly picked up on some key issues. For example, one of the big issues being their monetization was an honesty system. So you could message someone through the app, through the website, get in touch with them, agree to store your stuff, and then it was basically voluntary to pay a £20 fee to have that transaction go through. So regardless of how much I'm going to pay you to store my stuff with you, you just pay the website £20 to confirm that booking. And I was kind of like, this is 2014.
Okay.
So I'm like, we've got Airbnb doing this.
Yeah.
We've got these websites doing this. And you're taking a £20 payment on an honesty system if someone's made a booking. This is not right.
Yeah.
So I kicked off the website rebuild for them. And we just, to be honest, we heavily based it on Airbnb at the time. In terms of you could see a map where all the listings were, or you could view a list. In fact, they were side by side on the desktop. And even the payment system, we kind of took some inspiration from Airbnb, and we said we're going to charge a fee from both sides.
Okay.
Right. So the fee wasn't, I don't think it was visible to the person booking the space. Okay. They just saw their price. But the way we'd done it was, if you wanted £100 a week, then the person would be charged 110 and you would receive 90.
Okay.
Essentially. Those weren't the percentages, but yeah, we would essentially add on a price and then take a commission, which worked quite well. So I then left there, moved on to another startup. This one was a Netflix for magazines sort of thing. So one subscription, you get access to every magazine that we got on the platform. Really cool idea. This is where I first encountered, I think the problem that got me into CRO properly, which was the marketing team was given the budget, told to spend the budget and acquire customers and grow the company. And all the responsibility for growth lay with the marketing team, but the marketing team's only lever on that growth ability was advertising.
Okay.
So driving the traffic. And fortunately, and I think I maybe I lucked out here a bit, but obviously it being a digital platform, I could see everything every user was doing.
Mm.
Right. So I could see exactly how are people using this tool or this platform. How many magazines do they read? How many different categories do they read? How many devices do they log in on? All this sort of stuff. And we were able to, from that, to map out what does an ideal user look like?
Okay.
What are the actions they take? And then I started to do some research, right? I ran some surveys. I did some interviews with the people and asked them, what do you want from this thing?
Okay.
Right? How do you like to read magazines? How do you like to discover new magazines, if you do at all? What is your main reason for subscribing to a magazine platform instead of just buying your daily, your weekly or monthly magazine?
Right.
And I took this feedback back to the product team and said, here's all the stuff we need to be doing to actually properly acquire customers and then retain them in the long term. And I started to work with that team more and more. And actually, I actually started to move away from the advertising side and left that with my colleague. because she liked it, right? So I said, I'm going to focus on what our customers want, the feedback, the email marketing side as well, and start to optimize the business for what our customers actually want.
Yeah.
And saying to them, well, you know, ditch the referral program, ditch, I think it was user profiles. There were just things in the pipeline that the business wanted to do, and no one had ever mentioned this in any feedback.
Okay.
So that kind of got me into that. And then I moved to another final startup, which was a competitor to Zipcar.
Okay.
Familiar with Zipcar? Yes. Yep.
This is Roma Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch. Now back to the episode.
Interesting. You know, what I'm kind of picking up and sort of when it comes to your kind of your career journey working different CRO, what it sounds like on one hand is like a lot of companies, you know, we talk about product market fit. And like a lot of, it's almost like this, it almost seems inbaked where it's almost like companies have a sense of, they think they know what the users want. They have access to the data already. Like you mentioned, the data was there, right? But you got in and said, hey, like, what are users actually doing, what they actually care about, right? And that obviously transforms the product roadmap, because why spend money on something that users don't even want? Can you talk a little bit more about that? For example, like, you know, do you have any ideas or theories of why there's this still sort of, you know, there's this lack of fit between the product and the market, given that the data is available?
Arrogance.
Okay.
Is it people coming up with an idea, maybe speaking to a few people about it, likely friends, family, colleagues, you know, people who are going to tell them, yep, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Going off and building it, getting that initial piece of traction. And then it's that kind of, well, I've got this experience anyway, so I know what I'm doing. And I've built this product and some people are using it and spending money through it. Therefore, I've got product market fit. Let's go. Maybe arrogance isn't the word, because I think that that implies people know that they're doing that.
I get you, yeah.
When actually I think it's just a case of, you know, like I've been doing marketing for 12 years, right? It wouldn't surprise me if there are certain things I do because I'm going, well, you know, I've done this. I know this works. I'm happy to get on with this. I get a bit of traction with it. And then I'm thinking, sweet, I'm good. Now we can spend some money. Yeah. But actually, you do the research, you take a step back or get a third set of eyes on it, get someone else to take a look at that, and you realize, oh, actually, we've got some problems here. And I think what happened with these other two businesses was probably the amount of money being spent on it showed that there were results.
Okay.
Right? If you spend $100,000 a month driving people to it, you're going to get some results.
Yes.
And instead of looking at it from of the product market fit point of view, which is, 60-70% of people need to say, I'd be really disappointed if I lost access to that.
Okay.
I think that's the general kind of rule for the survey. They're almost flipping it the other way and saying, well, we've got 30% of people are buying it. So we've got something that people want and they like, but we need to optimize.
Okay.
Except they then don't go and optimize. They go build the stuff they think they need. But I think I'd say that's probably the problem. They get enough initial traction that they think this is going to work. And maybe they think 30% of what we're getting, 30% of the traffic buying is good enough. It's not even 30%. That's a huge number.
But I hear you. On one hand, it's also like that's money on the table. Right, that's my table that they're just not picking up because they're not being involved into it. And the thing I'm also kind of inferring from your story, well, is that because you worked in sort of different companies, right? For example, you talk about sort of that place where you kind of book a sort of hotel or essentially some kind of activity within 15 minutes, talking about storage place, talking about sort of, you know, cars, vouchers. I've almost this feeling that because you've kind of seen these different e-commerce models with different products, it must almost become a question of almost like pattern recognition, right? Because you've seen these different use cases by different companies, whenever you're working with a client, you're not someone who spent, let's say, 10 years working on just one product. You work with different types of items, with different kinds of models, and you're essentially coming with that knowledge to people. So that must be incredible, right? Because you're like, you know, like, sorry, did that play into your kind of wanting to be kind of having your own company? Like, you know, customers look like was, I imagine that, I just feel like you're someone who's curious and wants to do more with that.
Yeah, I think it was part, seeing that same problem pop up again and again and thinking, well, we need to fix this. And also seeing no one fixing it.
Yeah.
Right. I remember working with a quite a big media agency in the UK, PPC, Facebook ads, that sort of thing. And being on several calls with them or sending several emails and asking, what do you need from us? Mm. Like, what do you need us to do on our side to help us all get better results? And frequently getting the response, nothing. We don't need you to do anything. We're running the ads. We're good. You don't need to worry about it. And we're not seeing the results, right? So I'm obviously looking at it going, well, we're not seeing the results. That's why I'm asking what we can help with. It's not things are going great, but I'm trying to get something better from it. It's we're not hitting targets. What else can be done? And I remember mentioning landing pages and things to them for one brand that it was like, no, don't worry about it. We don't need any of this. No, so that kind of really annoyed me a bit. Nice. And combined with the fact we also got, and I know this comes up a lot because I've been on sales calls where people have mentioned this to me. Mm. I've spoke to other agencies who have had the same thing. We got pitched to by the directors.
Okay.
And then the people who worked on our accounts had about 18 months experience.
Okay.
And that really bothered me because I was like, we're paying you because you have the expertise that we don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure I've got more Facebook ads expertise than the guys you've put on our account.
Yeah.
Right. So that's like, well, what's the point in me hiring you?
Yeah.
This agency. So that's kind of why I see, it's kind of why Customers Who Click was a consultancy at first.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be the one working with the brands. The whole point was you would work with the expert, not someone reasonably fresh out of university who I've just trained up a bit and stuck on your account.
Tell me more about Customers Who Click. Tell me more about sort of the process of setting up. Tell me more about sort of like the experience of someone working with you.
So we're actually onboarding two clients today. Shortly after this recording, which is all quite a new process that we've spent a little bit of time working out. But essentially there's an onboarding process, right? Mm-hmm. We need to get access to everything we need. We have a call with them where we to make sure we've got everything, and anything we haven't, we just make it clear what we need. And then it's, what should you expect from us over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah.
Right? This is what we're going to be working on immediately.
Mm.
It used to be, here's our 3-month plan, kind of, but people don't really care about that. Really, they want to know what's going to happen next. Going back to what I was saying about the agency, right? It was what are you going to be doing next? What's this week? What's the next week? Do you need anything from us to help you do this? So I've kind of redesigned our onboarding process around that, and just making sure they know they know our goal for the next 3 to 4 months is to run tests and improve their website and give them learnings. Right? I don't need to tell them that. I need to tell them what are the learnings you're going to get from us next week,
okay,
and the week after. So we've revamped that a bit. We work on a 3-month rolling contract with clients.
Okay.
So we tend to do it as a bit of a, like almost a, sprint's the wrong word, obviously. a sprint's not 3 months, but like 3-month projects, essentially. You know, we'll try and identify some key areas that need work in those first 3 months, and we'll just target those.
Okay.
We'll just run our tests and our research focused on those. And then that's not to say we just move on and try 3 new things after that. But hopefully we've made some decent impact in those key areas. There might be some more iterative tests to run going on from that. But, you know, let's say ideally first 3 months we're looking at add to cart, right? We get a healthy amount of traffic to a product, but add to cart's a problem. Let's work on that. The second 3 months might be, well, actually, you know, do we think people are just landing on the wrong products? So let's work on product discoverability for the next three works and put a bit more focus there. But there's no reason why we can't be doing both.
Actually, if I may, on your LinkedIn, you talk about the UAM method. Is that still a part of what you're talking about in terms of onboarding?
It's not necessarily onboarding. That's more of our CRO method.
Okay.
The methodology we'll use. So after running, God knows how many tests, several hundred tests probably by now, it kind of felt like everything was falling into three categories. Yeah. Which then, yeah, to be fair, have subcategories. There's various different ways of dealing with things. But everything kind of falls into three areas, which is usability, anxiety, and motivation.
Okay.
Right. Usability, very simply, how does the website function? Mm-hmm. Right. Is it easy to browse? Do you have a good search function? Is your navigation clear? Are your product options easy to use and understandable? And can people just buy the products they want? The anxiety piece is questions and concerns that someone has about both your products and your business. So product-wise would be, if I'm buying this food product and I have a nut allergy, I need to know that this product does not contain nuts.
Okay.
Right? If that information is not there, you know, I can't buy it. Right? If there is no mention of allergens or allergy advice on that page, there's a very good chance that I just won't buy that product because I don't feel safe.
Okay. Right?
And then you've got the anxieties about the business. You know, if I've never heard of your business before, do I trust making a purchase from it? Generally, to be honest, if you have a reasonably professional looking Shopify site, you're doing well there already. But it can be product business reviews. It could be just visibility of customer service has an impact. Sometimes just putting an address in the footer can have an impact. Obviously, footer, you're looking at high intent people anyway, if they're scanning all the way to the footer as well. But yeah, essentially anxiety is, what are the questions and concerns someone has about your products and your brand, and how well are you doing actually dealing with those?
Okay.
And then the motivation piece is, what are people trying to achieve with this product? Yeah. So it could be, what are the pain points that they're trying to overcome with it? Or it could be the desired outcomes that they're hoping to achieve. Do they get that feeling from your website that your products are going to help them do that and achieve that? And then there's a little bit of, you know, scarcity and urgency to just nudge people over the line. But those only work if you've done those other pieces well. Right? Yeah. If people still have questions about a product, then putting a timer on it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If they're not excited about it, then putting a timer on it's not going to matter. But if you get those right, and then you have a little timer which says, order in the next 1 hour, 1 minute, we'll be able to ship it. Ship it today, you'll receive it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Something like that. Those work. I think they've worked every single time I've tested them. But they work so much better when you've got the other pieces done.
Nice. I think it. Thank you so much for kind of walking to the methodology. You know, it's like a lot of conversion rate optimization. I think it's so focused on sort of, it gets so granular, which is part of it. Like there's no, it's rare to hear someone actually talk about methodology that they've used. And again, one that's sort of linked to all the different projects and work that you've done.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just, it's pretty much everything we've done everywhere. You know, even going back to the magazine app, for example, part of it was, you know, part of the tweaks we made were motivation to get people over the line reading more magazines. And that was to do with the money they were saving.
Okay.
So we ran a very basic test, which was, it was during their onboarding, during their trial period, I think, one of the emails they received gave them an idea of how much money they saved by using Readly, the app, instead of buying the magazines. And this was just done on across the average, right? Okay. So it was on average, people read X number of magazines and that's going to save you. Oh, sorry. That would have cost you £43 something.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking, well, £9.99 is an absolute steal. Right. So that sort of thing helps.
Okay.
And then we did some obviously usability things to get people, you know, discovering more magazines. And then with that, there was a few other things, like one test that I did that I loved, which was still an A/B test, but it just wasn't on the website, yeah, we were sending postcards to people just with a little thank you note. Yeah. And I remember we tested this. The original idea was to get more trial people to subscribe.
Yeah.
And so we tested sending it to people in their trial period, and this had almost no impact whatsoever. In fact, I think it literally no remotely statistically significant stat change on any of the stats we were looking at.
Okay.
And it was just, it was literally a postcard. It said welcome on one side, and on the other, it was a handwritten note saying, welcome to the Readly family. Feel free to contact us if you've got any questions. It was something on those lines. No, yeah, no sales or anything like that. No marketing message, just a thank you. And I said, well, yeah, maybe this is just the wrong audience. Let's push it back 4 weeks and let's send it to people who started their paid month 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So they should receive this postcard. Yeah, about, I think it was about two, might have been 20 days, something like that. They should receive their postcard just over a week before their subscription is due to renew.
Okay.
Exactly the same postcard, and it had a massive impact on their numbers. Right. The number of magazines they read, the average time they spent in the app, the devices they activated on, the profiles they added, and their lifetime.
Interesting.
You know, because we tracked it for quite a while. Just a simple postcard had a really big impact on these people. And you know, we sent enough of these for me to be pretty confident in these numbers. I mean, not thousands and thousands, because it was handwritten.
Yes.
But Ashley, who did the writing, yeah, must have sent probably 2,000.
Wow.
Of them.
And it's not like you said that someone's doing this already, right? The idea is that, you know, you just by optimizing when it's sent, right? Not only like, yeah, it's not someone saving money, you're actually doing a lot more to increasing lifetime value, to increase engagement with the product.
But, and I think that's a really important point of CRO, that a lot of good CROs will do well. And a lot of people who have no experience would, you know, a lot of those people would have stopped, yes, when that first test went wrong.
Mm.
When they saw it having no impact, a lot of people would have said,
yeah,
right, we're done with this. It's taken up time and energy. Let's ditch it. It's having no impact. But I said, no, we've got the postcards. We have the process. All we've got to do is push it back, about 4 weeks, and have it pull some slightly different data. That's the only part of the process that has to change. Yeah. And we just carry on. And then we got that result.
Yeah. Well, before we head off, is there anything you'd want to discuss, or anything you'd want to focus on?
Just a quick mention that I have a podcast as well. It's Customers Who Click podcast, which in October, September, I'm not sure when this is going out, but October, September time, we've got quite a heavy CRO segment.
Okay.
So it'll probably be about, yeah, roughly eight to 10 weeks worth of just CRO related episodes. So if people want to check that out, yeah, Customers Who Click. That's probably it. I don't have any, unfortunately, I'm not launching a book anytime soon, anything, yeah, like that. So, I think if you want to learn more, go to the podcast.
Okay, that's great. So I think in a similar way, Will, if any readers want to find out more about your podcast, more about your company, where can they, what's the best way for them to follow you or contact you or just know what you're up to?
Yeah, obviously the website, customerswhoclick.com. But best place is probably LinkedIn. I'm very active, yes, on LinkedIn, posting content. And pretty responsive on direct message there.
Great. Will, thank you so much for being a guest today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
This is Romo Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch.